The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For the third and final hour of this edition of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS, focusing in on the 2020 statewide ballot initiatives here in Colorado. In this segment, we're going to dive into a few very pressing economic proposals that are on the ballot. And we're going to talk about it with a couple of folks from the Common Sense Institute. In a few minutes, we will be joined by Chris Brown from the Institute to talk about Props 116 and 117. But first, I am pleased to welcome the president of the Common Sense Institute to talk about the paid family and medical leave insurance program. Another warm and fuzzy concept, Proposition 118. Kristen Strom joins us on the show. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
It's good to have you on. I appreciate you helping us delve in a little bit into this because it sounds nice. Hey, we should have the government provide people with support so they can have medical leave and family leave when they need it. But of course, as with anything that the government is proposed to do, there's much more to it than meets the eye. Give us top line about what this proposal entails.
For sure. So this is going to be a new government-run $1.3 billion program where employees and employers will both pay into the program. Employees will actually be charged a tax, a premium that will be deducted from their paycheck to pay in. But just as you alluded to, it sounds nice, but there's a reason why this hasn't passed the several last legislative sessions, even when one party controls all levers of powers. And that's because the family leave numbers in this program just don't add up.
We're talking about $1.3 billion program. That's a sizable number. It seems like they're trying to model this sort of off of like how workers' comp works, maybe in a way. But I don't know. It's a strange animal. So in terms of the impact here, what could that be on small businesses, medium businesses in this state?
Yeah, when you look at it from the employer side, you know, it's really an effective corporate income tax increase of over 200%. And we did several different case studies. We looked at maybe a restaurant with 30 employees, a 3% margin. What would this do to them? And we found that it would reduce their margin by 10%. It would increase their cost by about $160 per employee. And as I don't need to tell you or your listeners today, Jimmy, restaurants, small business, they're struggling to hang on. And this one-size-fits-all approach with paid leave will likely have unintended consequences across businesses.
So the thing that's striking to me is how, well, there are a lot of things striking about this idea of a paid family and medical leave program run by the government, but up to 12 weeks of leave is what's proposed once it's fully implemented beginning in 2024. That's 3 months. That's a sizable amount of time.
It definitely is. And it's a key point. When you look at other states across the nation that have passed paid family leave programs, California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Colorado's proposal is by far the most generous program that would be implemented in the nation. And what I mean by that is that wage replacement for the program actually starts at replacing 90% of the wages. In these other states, they only replace, 60 to 65% of the wages when individuals take leave. So you're looking at individuals paying into a program. If they get 90% of their wages replaced, of course they're going to take the full 12 weeks. Who wouldn't? I would.
It does seem like just this idea put forward where, it's hard to say no to that. But for the employer, the idea that an employee can just take 3 months off. Now, understandably, there may be issues that will come up, but the idea that you're put into this position where you have no choice but to allow your employee to take off for up to 3 months at a point of time, and then they have to be able to come back, that could put especially smaller businesses in a very difficult position.
Yeah, you talk about training costs with potentially bringing on new employees to fill that time when individuals take time off. There's a few crucial nuances with the proposition as well. So it really takes the employee-employer relationship out of the equation. Employees no longer negotiate leave with their employer. It's negotiated with the state. And if you look on the individual side in terms of people paying into this program, it's not cheap. It's an effective income tax increase of 10 to 18% per individual.
That's not a small number. So when we're talking about business size, are there any exemptions? Like a lot of times what they'll say is they will exempt people or businesses with fewer than X number of employees, which oftentimes isn't nearly enough of an exemption for smaller businesses, and it still puts medium-sized businesses in a very difficult lurch.
Yet there is one exemption. So businesses under 10 employees, the employer portion will not have to pay into the program. However, employees will still have to pay in the program, which I don't think a lot of Coloradans realize if they work for a small company. And really the question that people should be asking, which you've done a lot on several other government-run programs in the past, is how does this program actually maintain solvency?
Yes.
What is the tipping point? And that's really what our study examined is there a certain point at which the utilization rate, so how many people are taking the benefit for how long of time, will reach a point which actually dries out the fund and there's no money left in it?
And is there a point that you calculated that may be that point?
There is, and we have a great tool on our website. I'd encourage individuals, business owners to jump on. It's commonsenseinstituteco.org. You can actually download our tool and run how much it would cost for you itself. But what we found is that this program could not exceed a claims rate of 6% of the people just over taking the benefit for an average of 9.5 weeks before the program's bankrupt.
Wow.
And when you look at I know. And when you look at other states across the nation, guess what their average claims rates are? Right between 5% and 7%. So a worry and something that I think Coloradans have to be really concerned and look at this with a critical eye is, are we establishing another program that's just going to end up being underfunded and ultimately require a bailout of some kind or a tax increase?
Again, we're talking with Kristen Strome, president of the Common Sense Institute. Yeah, that is the fundamental question, because you see it with public pensions and you see it with numerous other programs, especially when a state is, like we're seeing in 2020, unexpectedly hit with some sort of economic malaise, or in this case, a virus that has this significant impact and so forth. We can already see the writing on the wall even before passing this kind of proposal.
That's right. And it's really concerning. So it's not a huge claims rate that will really put this over the tipping point. And, the fiscal impacts are real to establishing such a generous, large program.
I pulled up an article I wrote, my column back in June for Colorado Politics, where I was talking about a proposal for paid family leave. And I just want to read a couple of sentences from it and get your reaction. I note that anybody who supports these kinds of proposals are focusing on the seen benefit of this kind of paid family leave. But I talk about Frederick Bastiat, the 19th century French economist, philosopher economist, who wrote that which is seen and that which is not seen. And I say, quote, they ignore the significant negative consequences of these policies to those who need it most. Economies are not zero-sum games, but business ledgers are. And also, as you're talking about the structure of this program, individuals themselves, their own pocketbooks are as well, I should add, with the current framing of Prop 118. And I think that's important to understand is that you may be focusing on, oh, this is the seen benefit. People will have support from the government and what have you. What about all of these consequences that will come down the line that you may not see when you're signing on to the bill or the proposition?
You're spot on, Jimmy. You know, a $1 billion tax increase, no matter how you want to package it, it's a lot of money. Families right now in Colorado are struggling to hang on. Small businesses are really struggling to hang on. A few hundred dollars a year to the average family is real money, and even more to employees. So there are real unintended consequences with establishing a program like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, where can people go to access that calculator, Kristen Strome?
Thank you so much. It's commonsenseinstituteco.org.
Definitely check that out. The economics of this do not add up at all. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. Really appreciate you breaking down Prop 118.
Thanks so much.
Once again, Kristen Strome joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show from the Common Sense Institute, where she is president. In just a moment, we will be joined by Chris Brown, Director of Policy and Research. But a quick note on Prop 118. I want to note that it really would be disastrous for Colorado's economy in the shorter and long terms. And we absolutely need to vote no on that measure. Once again, it's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, diving into the different critical topics of the day, particularly when it comes to the ballot initiatives here in Colorado today. That's what we're focusing in on. I am pleased now to be joined by someone else from the Common Sense Institute, their Director of Policy and Research, to talk about two measures I am advocating for: Propositions 116, the state income tax rate reduction, and Proposition 117, which would require voter approval for the creation of certain fee-based enterprises. Chris Brown joins us now here on 710 KNUS. Hey, Chris, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much, Jimmy.
All right, so let's jump into these two important initiatives, starting with Prop 116. This would cut the state income tax rate on all of us Coloradans, which is a flat rate, from 4.63% down to 4.55%. What's your take on this one?
Well, I think, as you said, off the bat, it's pretty straightforward. We took a look at this issue from an economic impact standpoint. I think overall, you know, our findings indicate that you'd see some additional growth in the private sector through individuals, households, and businesses retaining more income and increasing consumption, increasing spending. And then you'd see in the near term, particularly, but possibly over the long run as well, some more acute changes and reductions in government revenue and government spending as a result of the reductions in revenue. So a trade-off on this one, but very straightforward.
Yeah, I think you're enabling more Coloradans to have money in their pockets, especially at a time when we're trying to recover from the current economic malaise. So that one makes sense to me, though, as a no-brainer. I think the state will just have to figure out smart ways to spend its money, smarter ways, I should say. Chris Brown from the Common Sense Institute, let's talk about the One that I think requires a little more depth of discussion, and that's Proposition 117. This is one relating to having voters be able to approve the creation of fee-based enterprises that are currently exempt from Tabor if their revenue is greater than $50 million within the first 5 years. So, okay, what's this one actually entail?
This asks voters whether or not they want similar approval of new fees, you know, as you pointed out, that reach a certain threshold of new income. If they want similar approval of new fees to what Tabor allows currently for the approval of new taxes. And I'm not a lawyer. Maybe you'd be able to walk me through exactly the distinction between a fee and a tax. But the Supreme Court has made some distinction there. And as a result, we've seen fees grow significantly faster.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last, you know, several decades. That have grown essentially outside of the Tabor spending limits and without, you know, sort of direct voter approval.
Yeah, basically, the state legislature has been able to get around Tabor by declaring certain programs to be enterprises, and therefore they are funded through fees as opposed to taxes, and so the state is able to raise these fees, so-called fees, without having to go for a vote of the people, right?
Yeah, to put a finer point on it, in 1993, the first year that Tabor passed, about 46% of all state spending was exempt from Tabor. So a little less than half of state spending was exempt. That includes federal, that included federal spending as well, that is exempt. Federal revenues that are passed through and spent through the state, those were exempt. In 2019, that number grew to 69% of total state spending was exempt from Tabor. So over two-thirds of total Colorado state spending is now exempt from Tabor, again, largely due to this growth in fee-based revenue.
Yeah, to me, this is just a common sense way, if I can use the term with you, Chris Brown, of the Common Sense Institute, a very common sense way to put some restraint on government's growth in a roundabout way where they have been circumventing the taxpayers' limits on government spending and tax increases.
Well, I think what's important in tax discussions, funding of state government, it goes back to the discussion on Prop 116 as well, mm-hmm. is, you know, a question of not just how much money is flowing into the state, but ultimately what are the functions of the state government? How is it being spent? And I think, you know, more accountability and transparency and a recognition of what voters may actually want revenue to go towards, I think is really at the core of this. Mm-hmm. So I think we're trying to raise awareness and provide information. Our mission is to provide these research papers. And if you'll allow me to make a quick plug here,
by all means,
you can find all of our, you can find all of our research and dive into our reports and our findings at commonsenseinstituteco.org, where we make all of our research available, you know, sort of as a public good. And so I think for us in talking through Proposition 117 and in talking about budget issues for the last, you know, over a decade, there's always an aha moment when voters learn about the extent to which fees have grown and dive into exactly how money is being spent.
Yeah. So let's talk about this aspect. We were talking off air about this, and that is higher education and fee-based enterprises. And I'm not going to summarize it for it. I'm going to let you talk about that because it's an interesting observation that your research has shown, Chris Brown.
Yeah. Well, one of the largest share of enterprise revenue is in the form of fees towards higher education. So that includes tuition, along with several other fees that are paid by students primarily for higher education. And so in about over 15 years ago, roughly 15 years ago, a lot of the spending, higher education spending, was removed from existing under Tabor and changed to an enterprise so that it could be removed from the Tabor spending limits. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen significant growth in higher education fees as a result of, one, a declining share in the general fund, but in some of our other research, we've also seen the growth in fees is largely driven by just growth in prices, the growth in overall costs that higher education institutions are charging. And so I think it points to how, we'll say, how it's easier for fees to grow at a faster rate, not only because the legislature may be able to create new fees, but they can also grow at a faster rate than what the current Tabor spending limit allows. But even outside of higher education, we've seen non-higher education related fees grow significantly as well. Maybe just to give you maybe put a finer point on that, in 2018, when we have a flat income tax here, we talked about under 116 of we have a flat income tax of 4.63%. If our state's income tax were to increase to raise enough revenue to offset all tuition and fees, it would have to jump from 4.63% to 14.6%.
Wow.
So nearly a threefold increase to cover all fees. And if it were to just cover non-higher education, it would have to jump to 7.4%. So a jump from 4.63 to 7.4% to cover wow. non-higher education fees, and then all the way up to 14.6 to cover all higher education related fees. Just to give a sense of the scale.
Yeah, no, and I think that's very important. We're getting low on time here. Again, we're talking with Chris Brown, Director of Policy and Research at the Common Sense Institute, commonsenseinstituteco.org. And it's just so stunning to me how when you actually use those numbers and put it in perspective of what would the tax rate in Colorado be to cover all of those fees that have been increased without voter consent, that really underscores in my mind why Proposition 117 is so critical, Chris, because it means that we can finally start getting this under control a little bit, or at least make it so that government enterprises and the legislature cannot circumvent the Constitution in a way to just keep raising and raising the money that is going into their coffers.
Yeah, again, our hope is raise awareness and raise an understanding of how the state budgeting works. And that's really our mission.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you're encapsulating something that underscores to me the critical nature of this proposal. And I appreciate your thoughts today here on Proposition 116 and Proposition 117, Chris Brown. So thanks so much for joining us again from the Common Sense Institute. And one more time, the website where folks can go to check out the research and the data.
Yeah, please visit commonsenseinstituteco.org.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your informative insights today on the show, Chris.
Great. Thank you, Jimmy.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll check in with Michelle Ling on why we need to vote no on Proposition EE. Plus some final thoughts from yours truly when we continue on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, still whisking on back. Got a shoebox full of money by the Bronco. She knows just what you're looking for. 45 pistols on her skirt. If you mess with her, you're gonna get hurt. Don't mess with Miss Mercy. Don't mess with Miss Mercy. If you mess with Miss Mercy, be the last thing you ever did.
Grooving back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Fun and funky tune by the late blues guitar player Michael Burks as we continue on this edition of the program where we've been focusing on the ballot initiatives that are on all of our ballots that dropped Friday, October 9th. And we need to be informed. We need to be up to speed, not just on candidates and how to vote. I would say just across the board, vote Republican, of course. But we need to know and understand what's going on when it comes to the many initiatives that are on our ballot, and there are a heck of a lot, including one that seems nice and warm and fuzzy. Let's tax nicotine products more or anew in order to fund preschools amidst the revenue drop to the state government because of COVID-19. But is there more to this than meets the eye? Usually there is. Let's talk about it with the spokesperson for the No on Prop EE campaign, Michelle Ling, joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Hey, Michelle, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Jimmy, for having us. We're delighted to be here.
And it's good to have you here. I mean, I never like a tax increase, but there's something especially pernicious when you're looking at a regressive tax increase as well. Bottom line, what does Prop EE seek to do?
So bottom line, Proposition EE is a $294 million tax increase. It's a tax on tobacco, nicotine, vaping products. One of the most challenging parts of this is that, as you mentioned, it is a regressive tax increase. And what that means is, so 14% of people are using these products approximately. And of that 14%, 80% earn less than $40,000 a year. These are the same people who've been impacted by COVID. This is a terrible time to be taxing these folks.
Yeah, so when we look at this, it is a tax increase progressively over time. So the next hike will jump up to $1.94, and then we'll see it rise to, in 2021, rise up to $2.24 in 2024, and then ultimately 2027 is $2.64. So they divide it over time, but even quickly, when we're getting into this COVID, still amidst this COVID environment, it's going to put a squeeze on folks, to be sure. Talk to us more about the nature of the tax increase.
Sure. So one of the things that happens even before the tax increase hits, and this is one of the worst parts of this deal, is that the legislature has set a price floor. It's kind of price fixing, actually, set a price floor for discount cigarettes, requiring them to be sold approximately at the same price as premium brands.
A price floor.
Yes. So all cigarettes must be sold for around $7, and premium cigarette brands are already sold for that. It's simply requiring discount brands to sell at the same price as their competitors. There's 28 states that have previously legislated higher cigarette prices, but they've done so proportionally, so that price differences across the many cigarette brands sold by competitors, they're preserved. This is, as far as we know, the first of its kind in the country. And this is a very slippery slope from a business perspective. You know, if today we're setting price floors on cigarettes, maybe tomorrow we're setting price floors on other things that the legislature finds objectionable, fast food, soda, you know, not, you know, regular cars as opposed to electric cars, you know, any of these things. I can't think of another product besides labor, as we talked about, that has a price floor on it.
Yeah, that's the thing that's so stunning. And by the way, this was, as you mentioned, the legislature. This was put onto the ballot because it passed the legislature for the voters to then go ahead and approve since it's a tax increase. But it is stunning that not only are we talking now about a tax increase, but a tax increase on a price floor that in many cases has raised the cost of these products.
Yes, it only raises the cost of the products for discount manufacturers, and so this only really benefits one brand, and it only benefits Big Tobacco. This is an attempt by Big Tobacco to get rid of their discount competitors.
What about the idea that we should start taxing vaping products across the state as it is, and this is just a sensible thing to bring them under the tax fold like other nicotine products?
Look, if you want to tax vaping products, tax vaping products. The real problem with this piece of legislation is that it was introduced last minute in the legislature with the help of Big Tobacco. That should send, big warning bells, right? Big red flags when Big Tobacco is colluding on a tax increase for other tobacco manufacturers. It was introduced last minute in the legislature. It was reviewed for just 20 minutes. The committee heard from just two witnesses, and this is a 43-page proposal passed with just 72 hours left in the reconvened 2020 legislative session. In fact, some of the this was so fast and so furious that some lawmakers didn't even have a copy of the measure before its first committee hearing began.
Well, that's because you have to vote on the bill before you see what's in it. Like Nancy Pelosi once said about a certain sweeping piece of legislation. Again, we're talking with Michelle Ling, spokesperson for the No on Prop EE effort. Let's talk about the funding, where this would go. They say that it would be used to fund preschools, but as close observers of this know, oftentimes when money goes into the general fund, which is where this would go, it doesn't actually get directed as they say it will.
That's correct. So they claim it's going to preschool, and within the legislation, they have a whole laundry list of things they want it to go to, but there is no requirement that the legislature adhere to that. At the end of the day, this is at the discretion of the legislature. So the other thing that's really interesting about this is that the fund that these dollars allegedly are going to hasn't even been created yet. It doesn't exist. The proponents of EE are asking voters to award taxpayer dollars for a preschool plan that literally does not exist. So to your point, Jimmy, in other words, we have to pass it at the ballot to find out how it works. The questions are like, who qualifies for the funds? How are the funds distributed? Is every four-year-old everywhere in the state going to get preschool? What about cities like Denver that already have a preschool tax? Will they receive any money? Is this, oh my gosh, a preschool voucher program? None of these questions are being addressed by the proponents of EE. Instead, they're saying, hey, everyone gets preschool. And we know that no preschool will see a dime of this for at least 2.5 years, if ever.
And now we already know of the struggles that the state has had funding kindergarten statewide. This idea even of implementing some sort of maybe universal preschool program that gets expanded here, however they're conceptualizing this, just doesn't seem to fit with what's realistic anyway. But the bottom line to me here, Michelle, is that we're talking about a tax increase on products that will disproportionately hit lower income communities that have already been hit sizably because of COVID-19 in order to provide really just additional funds to the general fund for the state legislature to spend as they see fit. And on top of that, set a price floor for some of these products.
I mean, that's the gist of it. That's the really bad part of this. And, the other thing, Jimmy, if we're going to say that, universal preschool is important to us as a society or will benefit all of us as a society, and, there's debate on that, but, let's say that we all agree on that. Why are only 14% of the population responsible for paying for it? Why aren't we all?
That's a good question.
Although I'm not inviting more taxation. I just want to be clear.
Well, absolutely. No, it is an interesting question because, yes, I mean, the reality is that this kind of a program is something you should be approving altogether, and you should be looking at how you're going to fund that one way or the other. But in this case, in this particular issue that is right before us, it's not the way to go about it.
It's not. And, you know, I think that now is just a terrible time to raise taxes on Coloradans. You know, COVID has, it was completely blindsided a vast majority of us. And, you know, everyone's still trying to recover and families are trying to make ends meet.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with the no on Prop EE effort and encourage all folks listening right now to vote no on Prop EE. But where can people go to learn more about this initiative and why it is pernicious?
So they can go to Bad Deal for Co. So Bad Deal spelled out FORCO.com.
Excellent. Michelle Link, spokesperson for the No on Prop EE campaign. Thanks so much for joining us, breaking this down today.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jimmy. We're delighted to be here.
Once again, Michelle Ling joining us from the No on Prop EE campaign. Folks, ballots dropped yesterday, meaning that the figurative electoral bullets are about to fly. So let's hear a little Warren Haynes, and then I'll give some final thoughts on the topics we've covered today here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. The best bonus bumper music known to man right here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. I love being able to squeeze in some bonus bumpers here and there. And Warren Haynes, by the way, one of the greatest guitar players alive today. Hands down, bar none. And I think this tune, Just Before the Bullets Fly, was originally a Greg Allman one, by the way, which would make sense, especially because Warren Haynes was in the Allman Brothers Band and also, of course, is purveyor of Government Mule, the lead guy in that rockin' good band. Once again, you're listening to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. And by the way, speaking of great guitarists and legends in music, Eddie Van Halen passed away this week. May he rest in peace. Certainly tremendously influential powerhouse rock guitar player. And he leaves behind a tremendous legacy. A remarkable legacy. So once again, Eddie Van Halen, may he rest in peace. All right, I want to give some final thoughts here as we wrap up and wind down this edition of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show on the ballot initiatives that we have delved into in greater depth tonight. And by the way, be sure to check out the podcast, the Jimmy Sangenberger Show podcast page, so that you can listen to the interviews that we've conducted. We really got into some depth. I really appreciate all of our great guests for the tremendous conversations we've had today here on this very program. And we will talk a little bit more about ballot initiatives, I'm sure, between now and November 3rd. But I really wanted to dive in tonight, especially because there are so many statewide initiatives and amendments, 11 of them, and that's just statewide, on our ballot. And we need to be informed. We need to be on top of it all. So let's start with Amendment B. I'll kind of go in order here of amendments and proposals as opposed to going through the order we talked about on the show. Amendment B, repealing the Gallagher Amendment of 1982. Look, I understand the desire to do away with Gallagher. I understand the concerns that businesses have about bearing the burden for non-residential or commercial property of property taxes that they have. But at the same time, I'm not convinced that outright repeal is the way to go. My policy is always on initiatives and especially amendments, is when in doubt, vote no. And while I think that State Senator Jack Tate made some compelling points and other pro-business advocates of Amendment B make some strong points, I'm more drawn towards the Michael Fields, Jeff Hunt argument we heard earlier this evening about how there does need to be some reform here. There are problems, but just going ahead and saying, let's get rid of Gallagher, isn't necessarily the right way to go. Doesn't seem to be the right way to go. And so that's why I'm going to be a no vote on Amendment B, but hope that we can have some meaningful reforms developed over the coming months and years. So Amendment B, Gallagher repeal, no, at least is the way I'm going to go. Proposition EE, cigarette, tobacco, and nicotine products tax. We just heard from Michelle Ling about this, and I completely agree with her. I think this is a wrong idea, wrong-headed idea to raise taxes. It's regressive. It's not going to accomplish the goals of funding preschool and so forth that they say. It's just a flat no, without question. Popular vote, national popular vote, Proposition 113. Need I say more than no? Protect and preserve the Electoral College. It's one of the most critical, pivotal, small r Republican institutions in our country. In fact, it is one of the last vestiges of small r Republican government in its truest form as envisioned by the founding fathers and the framers of the U.S. Constitution. Strong no on Prop 113. Proposition 115, prohibition on late-term abortions. This is, I wrote about this in Colorado Politics a couple of weeks ago. I totally agree with Juliana Day when we talked with her earlier. This is the single best thing that the pro-life movement in Colorado has done from a legal standpoint, from a law standpoint, because it can pass. It is a reasonable abortion balance. And we need to finally start reining in late-term abortions in this state of Colorado, being one of only seven states to have basically unlimited abortion here in Colorado is deeply disturbing. This is common sense. It doesn't penalize a mother who goes through an abortion, who undergoes an abortion. For the doctor, they don't get thrown in jail. They can have their license revoked for 3 years or more and have to pay a fine. And we're talking about late-term abortions when a baby can feel pain in the womb, and there are some exceptions for the mother's life and related issues. No-brainer. Exactly the right thing to do. Put constraints on abortion. Yes, on Proposition 115. Then we get to Propositions 116 and 117 we talked about earlier in the hour. Prop 116, this is a common sense idea. Let's reduce the income tax burden on Colorado's people, on all of us in Colorado, from 4.63% down to 4.55%. Everybody can use some money in their pockets. Let's do it. Yes, on Prop 116. Prop 117, this is just also a no-brainer. The state legislature has consistently gotten around Tabor, the taxpayers' Bill of Rights, far too many times and far too long because of fees. They have said, oh, this is a fee. We're creating an enterprise here, so we're going to finance it through fees. And then they can raise the fees higher without having to worry about going to a vote of the people. We finally need to rein this in. It's a start. There's surely more we're going to need to do, but it's a start. We, the people, should get to vote related to higher and new fees. Yes, on Prop 117. And a hard no as well on Proposition 118. This is the seemingly warm and fuzzy paid family and medical leave insurance program. It sounds nice, but having the government institute this kind of program for up to 12 weeks of paid family leave and forcing it upon the people of the state and having the people of the state have to pay it basically as a tax increase. No. Poorly structured, the idea of the government stepping in and creating this kind of program is a wrong one. And we have to keep in mind, I mentioned this earlier in the hour, Frederick Bastiat's discussion that the good economist, quote, takes account of both the effects which are seen and also of those which it is necessary to foresee. In other words, there are consequences, there are results that you can see, which is the idea, for example, of, oh, people get a paid family leave program through the government. And there are results that you cannot see right up front. And that could be job losses, making it much more difficult for smaller size and medium businesses to improve their lots, to hire more workers, so on and so forth. Businesses cannot infinitely absorb additional expenses, nor can individuals. No, on Proposition 118. All right, that is it for us tonight here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Lot of information for you this evening. Appreciate you being along for the ride. We'll be back next Saturday night, same time, same place, with more engaging, intelligent talk, Seng style. Be sure to catch us then. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and may God bless America. Let's vote.